We're going to cover a variety of topics. I'm not kidding you. You're in for a real ride tonight. Well, look, I gotta give a shout out to everybody. Command has graciously allowed me to say thank you for this, and that's everybody who has visited caravantomidnight.com. You know who you are, and I just want to say thank you very, very much for your support. This is going to be a lot of fun, and it gives me something to do because, frankly, I'm bored to death, except on Saturday nights when I'm with you. And also tomorrow night, I'll be in with you also. And so something to do during the day has nothing to do with having a normal life. Besides, who wants normal anyway? As you'll soon find out when we bring on to the bridge of the mothership for the first time, Dr. Richard Allen Miller. Stand by. We'll be right back. As an original Black Ops team member, Dr. Miller's research in the field of the paranormal began as a graduate physicist, working at 11 years with Navy Intel, anesthesiology. His past and current writings and presentations reveal a depth of knowledge and practical experience in three major fields: alternative agriculture, New Age physics, and metaphysics. He now writes for Nexus Magazine and is reemerging at a critical time in humanity's evolution, where metaphysics and practical survival converge. Welcome to the bridge of the mothership that is Coast to Coast AM, Dr. Richard Allen Miller. Welcome, sir.
You're welcome. I have to ask whether or not I should say good morning or good evening to you. Where are we?
No, it's all the same. Well, that's a good question. Actually, you can say all of those things.
I'm here, and I'm an old man. You're at 1 o'clock in the morning?
Well, it's after midnight where I am, that's for sure.
Yeah, does that mean you're a vampire? What?
Now, let me ask you something about black ops. I understand a black op is one where the bosses don't really know that the security services officers are doing it. So would you clear us up on exactly what a black op is?
Well, I have no clue because that's a brand new term and nothing I came up with. Back when I was doing it, it was called Living Color. But what I was a, what they call, like in 3 days of the condo, I was a reader. That means I had above top, they didn't call it above top secret. They called it, there was confidential, secret, top secret, and top secret with vault permits. That means I could go into certain vaults without a need to know and just start reading, trying to connect dots on what the Russians were doing. Back when I was doing this, we knew about aliens, but we were way more worried about what the Russians were doing, and mostly out of Czechoslovakia primarily. And so that's where our primary focuses were in the early 70s. And while it's different today, when I was working Navy SEALs, we were called SEAL Corporation. Now, black ops, it would mean that it's covert, not sanctioned. And I'm one of those guys because my primary duty was to turn them into supermen. And so I went into my laboratory and built toys or enhancements that would make them be able to do things you and I can't. Well, you can't. Ha ha ha. I'm just kidding.
No, I'm with you. Now, are you talking about physically, mentally, or both?
Oh, yeah. The correct response when you ask a multiple question like that is yes.
Okay.
All of the above. And toys would include, here's an example. Jack Schwartz is out of Portland, later formed the Alethea Foundation, was able to stick needles through his arm and at will stop the bleeding. Now, if you don't think the military wouldn't know how to do that, so we set up the Menninger Foundation, Topeka, Kansas, to study this man. And sure enough, he could do that, and we still haven't quite figured out how to do it, but that would have been the kind of thing that was going on in the 70s. Military.
Yeah. Well, I did a little bit of research on you, and you have some very, very well-defined and quite deep opinions on a variety of things. This is not on the, now, of course, I've got a note page here, some things we're going to talk about, but I want to ask you something.
And by the way, that's why we've got 3 hours to start this dance.
Well, this is going to be what I call a hell of a chat. What do you make? What do you make of this whole Fukushima thing?
Yeah, that's a good place to start. I have been asked by Duncan Rhodes to write an article on Fukushima to scare the pants off everybody, and then offer some direction. Because, like everything else, it's mostly disinformation and manipulation in order to do other things. For example, when Turner came out last week and talked about that steam cloud outside Reactor 3, people across the country freaked out, and while they were doing that, they tried to run a bill through Congress where nobody noticed about it in terms of trans corporations having better rules and regulations for controlling their rights in different countries. And nobody talked about that. Now, that's what is called counterintelligence. That means lying by omission, not giving you false facts, but misleading you with selected facts. Now, Fukushima is possibly the worst event in recorded history in terms of man-made, and nobody has actually reported what's the real problem with Fukushima and what is not to concern yourself. There's a brand new article that just came out this morning. I'm going to pull it up on my computer. I can give you links at some point if people want to have a follow through. It was done by Deep Sea News, and it was by Kim Martini. And True Facts About Ocean Radiation and the Fukushima Disaster. Now, there's the good, the bad, and the ugly. What basically happened with Fukushima is in March, back then when the tsunami hit and we had that black cloud that went up on Reactor 3, they said it was a partial meltdown. It wasn't. It was actually the wrong color, and it was a nuclear explosion, a total meltdown that released some serious radiation, and everybody got dusted 2 years ago, and all five, almost 3 years now. And all, now, today, the big fear is this radiation coming to the west coast of America. And really, all the radiation that we're seeing along the coast right now, coastline along the west coast, is probably from Hanford, and it's leaking into the Columbia River that has now gotten out into the ocean. And why? Because Matt Stein's paper, 400 Chernobyls, would suggest that more than 400 of these types of reactors are sitting on major fault lines and further accidents waiting to happen. And the problem is all of the reactors are over 20 years old, and they're all leaking. The ones in South Carolina made the news 2 weeks ago. The one near you made the news last week. They're all leaking because they're old. And the reason Fukushima happened is because they were stockpiling, Japan, weapons-grade plutonium for some kind of weapons development. Now, that's against treaties that they signed back. And so that's why the disinformation, that's why the CEO stepped down 2 days ago. That's why they're now going to start slowly disforming out what actually really happened. And if you're worried about getting nuked, you already have been.
No kidding.
Probably not as, we'll talk about iodine, we'll talk about bioremediation, we'll go anywhere you want to, but mostly the show that's on the media today is not what you really should be focused on. If you want some direction on Fukushima, the first thing before we even do blame game, which is what everybody's doing, is that we, every single person, start writing that letter to turn off every single switch in nuclear energy. Once that's done, then we'll regroup and see what damage we've already done and how to deal with it.
Well, now that's going to take a big bite out of somebody's bank account. They're not going to like that.
Yeah. You should see the part I found out of when I called General Electric. They didn't even know about Fukushima when I first called. They didn't have a clue. That Daiichi design, by the way, which is similar to the one you have near you, is supposed to be a clean reaction. How do you have spent plutonium rods when you have clean atomic energy?
Well, you don't.
Good luck.
Yeah.
The whole thing is wrong. The technologies are wrong. Atomic energy is not cheap. It's not safe. And it's certainly not clean. And with that said, why would we go in that direction, let's say, using off the coast of Oregon buoys moving up and down with the tide? Or up in Nova Scotia, that'd be a good place to put energy collectors. Power the entire East Coast just with the tide changes each day in Nova Scotia. 60 feet, by the way, in case you're interested. You get a 60-foot change in tides, and that's enough power to power the entire East Coast. I would not be living on the East Coast if I were you, because the TVA, Tennessee Valley Authority, every single one of those reactor plants, they're out of sight. You can't quite see them, but there they are. They're all leaking.
Okay. Now, let's say we could pull the switch on all of them, just say, okay, the people have there's been a massive coast-to-coast uprising. That's a good idea for a segment. So now we have commanded those who govern us to turn it off. Now, how do we clean it up?
Well, that's easy. Well, not exactly. There's all kinds of people out there. John Hutchinson, Hutchinson Effect, Keshe Foundation, the list goes on and on. And they all probably have direction and intentionality. That's a good place to start. We're going to talk about intentionality later, because that's how we're going to save this world. But really, the idea of atomic energy, once those 400-plus major reactors are turned off, what about those ones in the aircraft carriers? And Toshiba makes ones like little household batteries for private use that wear out after 30 years. Where do they get put?
I don't know.
Thank God dug some holes up on the moon craters for us to fill it up so the moon can wink back at us glowing.
Oh, that doesn't sound good. That just doesn't sound good. All right.
Now, what has studies? Studies show that hemp, not medical marijuana, but hemp, will actually bioremediate certain things like cesium-137 and other kinds of things right out of the ground and into the plant. You certainly can't smoke it, but I'll tell you what you can do is we've now done studies on pharmaceutical mushrooms, reishi, maitake. Some of those will actually bioremediate volumetrically even better than hemp. And even now there's a new study that shows that psilocybe, psychedelic mushrooms, psilocybin, will actually pull out that radiation even better than pharmaceutical ones that are, you know, primarily used for cancer research or things of that nature.
Now, if somebody says, "Dr. Miller, I like you, but I can't take your word for it. I've got to look deeper. Well, where can you look if people want to follow up on that? Where can they look?
I am writing that Nexus article as we speak. Every single time I sat down to write it, a new article come out that changes the entire spin of things.
Oh, boy.
And so at this juncture, I'm just starting the article. I have a daily diary that I keep of, you know, articles that I run across that might be sifting through it and finding what's real and what's a false flag or disinformation. It's a challenge, even for the experts, because nobody really knows how bad these kinds of isotopes will be in our diet. I would say this, right now today, probably your exposure background from Fukushima may have increased upwards of 10 times what you were previously exposed to. Is that dangerous? We don't know. It would appear not. I used to wear a dosimetry badge, so, you know, we don't know.
Yeah.
But what I do know is, as it's growing, okay, let me do it this way. The military uses computer algorithms, a form of Clifford algebra, very similar to what Cliff High calls infobots with Ben Goetzel's ONS algebra. We use a form of Clifford algebra, and it picks up keywords on the internet to accurately predict the future based on what people are thinking, writing, and doing some statistical inference. And right now, as of less than 6 months ago, and I think I sent you that four-pager, that four-pager is a summary of what now our information is suggesting is becoming an extinction event on Earth by the year 2050. There will be no life as we know it in the biosphere if we continue on the path that we're doing right now. That means things have to hit the brakes, and we need to get some due diligence going on for oversight.
All right, let me ask you this. How long do we have until we need to do this now, but where's the red line?
Yeah, here's where we slide into metaphysics. Because time and space aren't really real. I can prove that. There are subsets of certain levels of a hologram, but if you use a quantum universe, it has certain solutions and realities, imaginal and otherwise, that give you what can happen. A holographic universe, which is a different model, not real, will allow you different solutions. We choose today working more with a holographic universe because it doesn't deal with space and time. It deals with information. And really, then, the difference between a quantum universe and a holographic one is that a quantum universe has indeterminacy. That means the more you know about one thing, the less you know about something else. And so you have entanglement and decoherence. Whereas in a holographic universe, using that as your model, you have basically information and resolution of information. And in that system, EQ, emotional intelligence, turns out to be more important than IQ. And so it's a physical plane. Emotional plane is a physical plane with more detail. And so the resolution. And with that model, that has a solution where it would allow you to, quote, change the movie. And that's where we're going to go in terms of internal landscape and how we change the mark of man. Basically, all of us form what Carl Jung called the collective unconscious. And within that, there is an apocalypse element. And that's Joseph Campbell when he said, when you see the kingdom of the Father on earth, the apocalypse has already occurred. It is perpetual in its potential. And so whether it's 3 minutes to midnight or 3 milliseconds to midnight, it's not about time. So you have to get out of jail card.
Okay. And are you suggesting then that human beings deal with these quantum and holographic universes at their option?
Well, everybody's got a belief system. How does that go? If two aliens walked in, and you are a staunch Christian, and two aliens walked in the door, the big question is, will you be able to see the aliens? How does that go? I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't have believed it. Your upper brain, the one that you call the brain, the mind, that is there to make your belief systems true. There are other brains in your body, your enteric nervous system, your gut. That was the first protocol I developed for Navy SEALs. We were not interested in how strong they were or how many bridges they could blow up. What we wanted was intuition and guessing. When you had to make an internal guess, do you go right or left? We wanted someone that was paranormal. Now, if you use a quantum universe, you're stuck in with what we call statistical inference. And paranormal then was when you were beyond statistical inference. We would call it ESP.
Beyond statistical influence. All right, we got to stop right there. We got a lot of breaks we've got to take. It's going to drive you nuts. But I want to hear everything you have to say. I'm just going to stay out of your way. We're visiting with Dr. Richard Allen Miller. His book, new one, is Power Tools for the 21st Century. You better put your waders on. It's getting deep already on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Richard Allen Miller has so much information tonight, it's enough to make our brains explode. So I'm going to beseech him to just toss those cards out just a little bit slower because I want to know the difference. I want some elaboration, some amplification, some illumination on quantum versus holographic universes. We don't want any entanglement or decomprehension. I don't like that. Suffered enough in my life as it is. Anyway, say that's Robin Trower, by the way, from his Caravan to Midnight album. And no, I did not decide to call myself John B. Wells because of the song Johnny Be Good. Somebody asked me that, and I went, no, not really. I didn't really make the decision. I had just been born. All right, we'll be right back with Dr. Miller in just a moment. Just freshen up your tea a little bit and just come right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. All right, Dr. Richard Allen Miller, let's carry on here. Let's go back. You were saying the first protocol for Navy SEALs is to be a little on the paranormal side.
Well, yes, and I move too quickly for a lot of people, so I will slow down. I've been told you're a pro, and I'm supposed to make you dig for the information rather
than... No. Don't make me work. I'm too busy absorbing.
But let's go forward. Originally, the way that all started was back in the late 60s. It was called SEAL Corporation out of Amherst. And my handler, Ted Kruger, if you're still alive and out there, kiddo, he contacted me as a physicist working at Boeing. I was at the Boeing Aircraft Company. I'd just come out of grad school. I did not know at the time I was a top draft pick, even out of high school, and that's another story we'll cover in a little bit. But basically, he charged me with coming up with some protocols that would take normal diver SEALs and make them supermen. That means paranormal. They could, for example, slow their breathing in such a manner that they experience time differently. Now imagine someone that was experiencing time differently doing martial arts, where the experience of it was Tai Chi, whereas in fact they were doing Hung Gao, breathing techniques. That's what I did. I developed 8 protocols that would make a normal man, you, anybody, you learn how to control your heart rate or pulse using biofeedback, you could do things people could not normally do otherwise. And so that's what I did for the first 4 of 11 years, working these protocols. And when Dr. Milan Riesel out of Czechoslovakia defected to the U.S., they brought him to my home up in Seattle, and I debriefed him. And that became the first of 8 protocols. That one was called ESP Induction Through Forms of Self-Hypnosis, How to Think with Your Gut. Now, the gut means that when you make decisions from there, apparently it's outside space and time, because in my abilities, I was a 3 sigma error coefficient. That means that when I made a decision to do something, it was 99.9975% correct. If you think about what you're doing with your upper brain, what happens is you create alternative scenarios. And when you create those alternative scenarios, some of them include you getting shot. And so what you wanted, statistical inference. And so what you wanted was something that was dead on because it was what you were supposed to be doing. And 40 years later now, I'm beginning to understand even more regarding what that actually implies. And that's where we're going to talk about later in the program, how to change the movie and make it what you want it to be.
All right.
That'll be the next evolution in man's stages.
Now, the new book, your new book is Power Tools for the 21st Century?
That is correct. That's the one that came out this last year. Has a supplement workbook 1 that also includes 2 more workbooks, which will come out this year. And those were the basic protocols. If you did any of them, the first chapter is on foods. You start with your physical plane. If you want to be spiritual and paranormal, you have to have something to launch from, because the physical plane is simply a reflection of other planes. If you want to know how someone how spiritual someone is. Look at their body. That's the
amplify that a little bit. I'm sorry, I say amplify that a little bit.
Well, okay, yes. That means that would you go to a fat doctor? What's wrong with that scenario? That
right.
means that doctor can't help himself. How is he going to be able to help you? Now, with that concept in your mind, your physical body represents all the different levels of you. And while you have a little nook here and a little panty there and whatever, that is a reflection of how you can start your own process toward personal evolution, taking responsibility for getting off the couch and becoming more of what you meant to become. That's called purpose.
What's the actual first step? What is the first step to getting off the couch? What do you have to do to just get up?
Well, start with food choices. You know, children under four actually are more indigenous than aborigines and can make better food choices than adults do. That would imply that the adults are already gone and they're not going to be the ones to save this earth. It will be our children under four. However, those children under four are watching you and how you behave. That's where they learn how to do their neuroticisms. And so what you're trying to do is walk your talk. And everybody's walk is different. We're not all going in the same religion, the same spirituality. Spirituality is not what you do, but how you do it. That's a good intentionality. The purpose of why you're doing what you're doing. That's where you start, is trying to get some internal dialogue. If you wanted to start that process, I would suggest you start keeping a journal. Ira Pogoff, that's a good way to talk to yourself. And your dreams, your higher self, the part of you that is trying to go somewhere else in this universe, talks to you in dreams and emotional states. That's how your higher self talks to you. It's not about an elephant flying through the air. It's not about things. It's about how you feel about those things. And that's where you start, keeping a diary.
So that would suggest that was the trigger for the whole universe was intention.
That is intentionality. You know, James Hillman, one of my teachers, has written an extremely important book called The Soul's Code, In Search of Character and Calling. Character are the little nooks and crannies in how you choose to handle something. And everybody's different. I do broken wing perfect. But, you know, I whine a lot. But everybody's different. And the purpose is the calling part. Finding why you are here. That is the primary reason. You have somehow, given up your memory, if you will, for why you came here with the express purpose of discovery. And you create karma when you're fighting yourself. You know, you can walk down, it's called the flow. To be able to find that line in the road for the sports car that hits that curb correctly. That is what your purpose is to find out why you're here.
And you actually accomplished this through what primary steps?
You can start with foods. If you have a physical body to launch from, that's a good place to start. Exercise and things of that nature. Education, for example, is probably the only thing you get to take with you when you leave here.
Okay.
And so there's your first order, is to become more aware. Man doesn't really have rights. He has responsibilities. If you had a right, it would mean because you had full disclosure. You don't. And so we get into determinism and where that leads metaphorically. And so basically, that's why Aleister Crowley and some of the other magicians through centuries talked in terms of the will, the love of will. The Greek had four words for love. There was Eros, Philo, Agape, and Telema. The love of will, or the love of purpose. In other words, do what thou wilt, shall be the whole of the law, but love is the law, love under will. That means the most important thing for you, me, whatever, is to discover what your will is. And the way you do it is the universe feeds back to you. It'll fight you or it'll encourage you. And the way Crowley put it once is, if you're doing your true will, none will say nay. You're not in conflict with anyone. The universe itself wants you to be doing what you're doing. When it doesn't, you're now developing karma because of your relationship to yourself. And that's part of the character aspect that Hillman would talk about.
Let me get crazy with it here just for a second, Doctor. Now, if you introduce the concept of a Satan, and you say, all right, what is it that I'm feeling that is a conflict within myself? Is like a child who, you know, he wants or she wants the slice of cake. It's right there in front of the child. But the child says no, throws that block. Is it spiting its parents? Is it whatever is going on in the child's mind? What is it that stands between a person and what they know that they really want? What is that self-defeating lemming to the sea kind of a syndrome that many people, according to the shrinks, are going through every day? This quest for self-actualization. I first started hearing about it in the 70s. What is the element that stands between a person and themselves? That's the short question.
The realization of Netanu, there it is, the union of self. By the way, that's only halfway to God. Self-realization only gets you to yourself, and then God-realization is straight up. You need a helicopter and probably a pilot. So just realize how far down the hole we are right now. I would say that imagination is reality. This is the principles of imaginal psychology. Now, I am not saying the world works like this. What I'm suggesting is that when you embrace a belief system, that sets up its realities and access and its limitations. And so your beliefs often need to be considered tools rather than, I have a whole chapter on how to use beliefs as a tool. And when they're no longer appropriate, you fill them up and put them in a drawer. You don't have to get rid of your beliefs, but they may get you killed in Iraq. And so what you're trying to do is use your beliefs as tools rather than assume truths and drivers. Because, like I said earlier, in the What the Bleep, when the shaman saw the ship off in the horizon and the Indians never saw it, the reason they didn't see the ship is because it was not within their belief system that such a thing could exist. And so they was filtered out as not real.
That's the tool you can't find on the tool bench right in front of you.
That's the one you have to work at like a layer of an onion. It's a process. It's not a final goal. It means Simon says you can go halfway to the door. What happens next is you never reach the door. It is the journey.
Wow. Extraordinary. All right.
I know you wanted me to slow down, but I'll still do the one-liners on you.
I love them. I'm writing down as many as I can. I plan to quote you many times in the future.
In the power tools, because this is what all navies now, these protocols are used for more than SEALs. I did the first three units, SEAL units 1, 2, and 3, and then a bunch of astronauts. And now Annapolis and others now use the ESP protocols as, gospel. Everybody's taught how to think with their gut. Because when you think with your gut, you don't make mistakes. And how well you can listen to your intuitions is as paranormal, if you will, as you can get. And that making a decision, do I run right or left? Now, East LA, when they're out of food, is that's what a zombie is going to be.
Now, how does this contradict, Doc, how does this, I'm sorry to step on you like that. Your thought, and then I got a question. Well, doesn't that contradict training? Or are we just training the wrong thing? In other words, if you just
Oh,
your
man,
first
that's
instinct.
A good place to start. How about our education? Yeah. And trying to assume that all children are equal. In fact, that is the wondrous part about children, is that they're not. And they all learn at different rates. So why do we have this program of graded institutions that do second and third and fourth grade and stuff like that? The problem is we need an educational reform in our society in order for this current problem with Fukushima at all. Probably Fukushima was created by the collective unconscious to force man into doing his own evolution, like kind of like the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still. And Klaatu is sitting there talking to the scientist, and the scientist said, we'll change. And he's saying, maybe it's too late.
You think that possibly the collective unconscious actually propelled us into a disaster so that we could act?
Forcing, that's one way, a model. That's one way of looking at the situation in terms of, there are mentats or ways of approaching reality where you could say, everything happens for a reason and everything leads to something better. Now, with that mentality, where are you going to go with that? It's going to enlighten you is where it's going to lead. And nothing that's happening is wrong.
You know, I mean in no way to simulate in any form, on any level, any patronage. But I got to tell you, it sounds to me like you have your finger on the answer to why things appear to be so entirely screwed up, and yet we are just... We cannot escape the path we're on. We are going to that spot.
By George, I think she's got it. The rain in Spain. Yes, that is the concept of why all saints in history talked about the importance of training the mind. That's a good place to start. Here's one. There's a lot of people out there that talk about alien abduction or targeted individuals. You know, it's like schisms in the subconscious where individuals are having a group experience of something else going on. Now, the targeted individual, how you defend yourself is, man is responsible for the thoughts he chooses to entertain. That means if that came in from somewhere external or from yourself, if it's not appropriate, you would push it out of your mind. It comes back in like pornography, you push it out again. And you keep doing it until at some point it becomes a natural order of training your mind to focus only on what's important, and what is a distraction, you eliminate.
That is excellent. Can you hold on to all of your thoughts? I know you can, because we have to take another break. A fascinating interview tonight with Dr. Richard Allen Miller. We shall return momentarily.